This is a public service announcement. This episode is brought to you by Novatech. Novatech is a corporate innovation platform launching Innovate Nigeria Conference on February 6 to 7, 2024. This is a conference for startups and corporates to deepen corporate innovation in Nigeria. Check out www.novatechconference.com. N-O-V-A, NovatechConference.com. See you there.
Hello, Curious K podcast listeners. It's your favorite host, Cole Akpo. And I'm happy to be back with another amazing episode to ignite your curiosity. As you know, on Curious K podcast, we stay curious. And if you're joining us for the first time, the Curious K podcast is an amazing show that has been running for over 2 years with over 50 episodes, where we've showcased amazing startup founders, ecosystem builders, VCs, and everyone working to make entrepreneurship thrive on the African continent. And as part of the podcast, we've explored emerging technologies and exciting topics like Web3 series, AI, and more. So these are great conversations you have to check out if you're tuning in to the podcast for the first time. And today, we're having a great conversation with Nwanne, the founder of the Talent Pipeline Company, also known as TTPC. Which is a talent development company building a pipeline of the future workforce. And if you're wondering why the future workforce, right? I mean, I would like to set a quick background right there. According to various data, including UN, Africa's total population will reach nearly 2.5 million by 2050. Current median age is 19 in Africa. You've probably heard that Africa is the youngest population in the world, and which means half of the population, you know, in Africa is younger than 19. And we've also had like various data from African Development Bank, which says 30 million children are out of school across Africa. 35% of youths have no access to secondary education or technical skills development. This just shows how important it is to have conversations around this issue. And today, we'll be exploring overhauling the education curriculum in Nigeria, the importance of adopting internship, apprenticeship model, and more. So without further ado, let's welcome Nwanne to the Curious K podcast. Nwanne, thank you for joining us today on Curious K podcast. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Kolapo. I'm excited to be on the show too.
Thank you. This is a long time coming, so I'm happy we're doing it today.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah. So how are you? How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Lagos is sunny, but I think it's going pretty fine. Trust you're doing well too.
Yeah, sure. And thank you. Thank you for asking. All right. Yes. So let's get into it and one it, right? Can you start by giving us a brief background of your work over the years, you know, and how various work you've done evolved to founding the Talent Pipeline Company?
So I think when I reflect about what where I have been and the work I've done and, you know, getting up onto founding the Talent Pipeline, I like to start from my journey in the tech ecosystem. But just recently, it occurred to me that I don't think that's where the journey started from. It actually started with the first job, the first opportunity I got right after my first degree. And it was with an oil and gas servicing firm. One of our services was providing trainings for oil and gas professionals. So I was in the learning and development department, putting together all of all this training, sometimes developing the curriculum, finding the trainers to do this. I did that for about a year and a half, and eventually found myself in the tech ecosystem. So yeah, this is what, close to 7-8 years running actually. And so getting into the ecosystem, trying to find my place, because I'm not a technical person, quote unquote. So way back 2016, you had to be a software engineer or a designer to, you know, feel among. But here I was doing more of community engagement, getting people to come together, bringing investors and startup founders together, just generally organizing events that that was meaningful for the ecosystem at the time. And over time, evolved into working in the acceleration space. And then I had to read a lot and understand what was happening in other climes, like how people were building their companies in Silicon Valley. And I started to speak to founders. I started to get involved in their businesses and also offer advisory, so to speak. And then in having conversations with founders, I did identify that most of these founders, like, it wasn't a money issue, but people would always come to, yeah. So I also go by, I also identify as a dust connector, right? Where I like to connect people to opportunities, so be it work or to investors. And people would always come and they believe that their greatest challenge is not having capital to run their business. That's why they're not moving. And when we sit down and, you know, go deep into the strategy that they're currently deploying, find out that it's not really a money problem, because some of the things that could have been solved would have been, you know, could have been solved through collaborations, partnership. And then I started to understand that for certain people, it was a talent problem. And so it's always been at the back of my mind to try to solve this. Some 2021, started an outsourcing company to get experienced talents connected with not just local opportunities, but also global opportunities, because, hey, I have a lifelong dream to be a digital nomad. Well, I am a digital nomad. So yes, just getting people, connecting people to those type of opportunities. And in trying to close out on roles, realize that, yes, we say that we have a lot of, we have great talents in Nigeria and Africa, but it's hard to close out on roles, because when you go into the interview, you realize that some of the talents don't have what it takes. And it's more of a behavioral or attitudinal problem as opposed to even being, like, you know, a technical problem. Yes, there's some people who haven't built enough capacity and so they can't be hired. But then it's just the general laxity towards work. And then I thought about it. Okay, yes, because there needs to be a mindset change. And the idea was to go into the universities, work with undergraduates, to start to help them develop their capacity and prepare them for the workplace. But in deploying now and implementing, we've realized that, yes, there are people who have now graduated, they're recent graduates, and can't also get opportunities. And so pretty much at the talent pipeline, we cater to both fresh graduates and undergraduates. Yes, I think that's a summary from where I started and what I'm doing right now.
So how long have you been running Talent Pipeline Company?
So yeah, officially I'd say in March of 2023, this year. That's where we had our very first bootcamp.
So tell us about, like, your business model, right? I mean, explain what you're trying to do in trying to, like, create our pipeline. There's things to educate people to get the right job. And it's also important to upskill the existing talents that we have. So how are you monetizing this? And if you can tell us, like, the impact you've made so far, maybe the number of people you've trained or you have in the pipeline to train as well, and some of the specific industries you are also training for.
The business model is simple. We get talent to sign up to our bootcamp programs, and they pay a commitment fee, so that we also want to be able to hold them accountable to stay through to the program. Even though this year, from the very first cohort, we've been running a scholarship. And so we've run two cohorts now, and the third one in November. And that's going to be the last, you know, scholarship-based cohort from TTPC, only if some donors want to, from next year. But yes, the talents are supposed to pay a commitment fee to be a part of the boot camp. And then we also find them placements. What we do is we manage these talents on behalf of the organizations that we place them in for these students, for the undergraduates, because they need to be in school, they get placed when they're on holiday. And so their holiday sometimes ranges from between 1 to 3 months, and we're able to put them on the short placements. We're working with them to ensure that they deliver. And we're also following up with their line managers or supervisors to get feedback from them. And that's what we use to help shape them some more. Our curriculum is pretty straightforward. We're focused on non-technical talents, where we are, like I said earlier, it's a mindset change that we're trying to imbibe, where we're dealing more with core human strengths, so AKA soft skills and mentorship. In the bootcamp, they get to interact with different professionals who have worked in different parts. We also introduce them to career paths that exist within tech that are not your core technical career paths, like software engineering or machine learning and designing. We focus on things like project management, customer success, operations, and digital marketing, product marketing, and whatnot. So for the graduates, we're able to place them on longer contracts, so say for a year. For the first 3 months, we're handholding them, believing that like within 3 months, they would settle in properly. But then in that 12 months, they're put on a learning part. So the organization still has to liaise with TTPC, because then we need to be able to evaluate and see that the talent has really improved and can move on to the next level. I'm trying to remember. The second question was...
Impact, maybe the number you trained and are looking... Okay.
We have gotten over, because we the next cohort starts in November, and so far we've gotten over 200 applications now from the very first boot camp up until now, and we have trained over 100 talents. So we've also done some corporate trainings where we've gone into some organizations and we've helped with their we've helped conduct customer success, customer management trainings for them. And then the bootcamp specifically, we have trained about 50 people. We have about 50 people who have successfully graduated from our bootcamp. So you don't just come to the bootcamp and think, oh yes, I signed up for this, and at the end, I'm going to get a certificate. There are criteria for you there are criteria that have been put in place before you get your certificate of completion, and then we can now also place you. So far, we've been able to place about 5 talents. I would love to do more. We're hoping that a lot of companies would be open to receiving interns. The last cohort bootcamp cohort, we actually had people from Nairobi, Kenya join, and also Kumasi, Ghana. The guy from Kumasi is actually an undergraduate who is currently interning at a tech hub in Kumasi. And it's been a very, very interesting experience for him, because he's always wanted to get into the technology space. Just being in the bootcamp, interacting with different professionals, the mentorship sessions were really useful for him. And now that he's actually doing the work within a hub, you know, it's exposed him. He's always excited when we have our weekly check-ins, because he's learning a lot, and that's what we intend to replicate over time.
Yeah, I like that. And congratulations on the progress so far. And before we go into the next question, I would like to know your boot camp. How long does it typically take?
So as of today, it's running for 5 weeks, but the next set, and that's starting next year, we're now going to, it's going to be an extended period where the boot camp would last for 8 weeks, because then we need to spend a lot of time with the talents, and the criteria to even get into the boot camp is going up. But then next year, by the end of Q1 next year, we're looking to fully launch an academy where people can just go and take short courses on project management, operations, product marketing, digital marketing, and get their certificate and you know, and go. But then the bootcamp, it's, we're taking it a notch higher next year, where it's more extensive. And then after, as part of the, so the learning itself, it's and the mentorship would be for 8 weeks, and then we also place them for a month or two and monitor their progress.
So let's go into like the education system in Nigeria, right? There's been a lot of conversation about revamping the education system. We have to change the curriculum. What we are teaching in school is not what it's required in the business world. You know, this conversation has been going on. And it still looks like we are still, like we've not had like the progress that we should. So what do you think, why do you think we haven't achieved so much over the years? I mean, we all understand what those problems are, but it looks like we're stuck.
Kalapa, don't put me in trouble. I don't know that I have. Don't put me in trouble, please. I don't know that I have the definite answer to this. But from where I sit, I think that over time, why this hasn't been achieved or implemented is maybe we've not just had the right people put in place to do the work, right? And I think that what would help us move forward is a lot of collaboration, getting insights from private sector individuals, because the truth is the curriculum it's old. The world is changing. It's continuously changing every day. We need to be able to keep up with what is happening, right? We said that the only constant thing is change. Yeah. And so we cannot have a static curriculum. We need to develop our curriculum as the world changes, so to speak. So some 50 years ago, the in thing was to go to school, become an accountant or read banking and finance, come out, work in a bank, be a medical, study medicine, come out, be a medical doctor and things like that. But we've seen that these things have changed, because like what you even learn in the classroom doesn't necessarily evolve to be what you find out in society. And I want to not talk about the jobs that are available. What are the jobs that are available right now? So I don't know that there is a Nigerian university that has a course on product management, for example, that you go and you get a degree on product management. And that's something that a lot of people are interested in. Like when we talk about we keep saying the future of work, but I believe that like we're there right now. We are in that future that we've been talking about right now. So the earlier government and private sector, and by government I'm also putting like the institutions under government, the earlier that we collaborate and come together to develop a curriculum that is worthwhile, so that people don't have to go to school, spend 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, and they come out and now have to go on a different learning path to be able to upskill themselves to be employed. So why go through all that stress and then you're not going to be employable? I think that's where I'll stop.
All right. Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing that. I think it's important. I mean, all the points you've identified. I mean, starting with like, do we even have the right people, handling the parts, I mean, the future of education in Nigeria. When I was reading through the statistics, I read out, starting out this podcast when I was doing research, I'm like, how do our leaders sleep, in Africa? How did they go tonight and just feel good? Because this is like serious problem, serious issues we have. We are talking about AI now, all those new technologies, blockchain. I mean, do we even understand all this technology? I mean, look at the number of half of school children, all right? We are also talking about revamping the education. So it's a lot of work to be done. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. I believe we can make this happen over time once we keep having this conversation about it.
Sorry, something just came to my mind, if you don't mind, if I could just add to
it. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And I think that in the, like we said, I think revamping of the curriculum, we also need to be able to think about having indigenous content, like not borrowing from other people's culture, because then if we look at like countries in Asia, for example, and we think like, oh, they're developing faster than we are, I think that's something that works for them, taking in, being very indigenous in the way that they develop their own learnings, because they own it. It's part of their culture. It's ingrained in you at home. It's ingrained in you when you go to your place of learning, i.e. school and wherever. So we need to also think about that. Like, we need to be very realistic if we're going to redevelop the curriculum, and think about our environment, think about our society. How do we want to grow? How do we see this is where we are? This is what we have. These are the resources that we have. What do we want to achieve as a nation, first of all? And that should sort of like, lead or guide how we think through redeveloping. And I can use China as an example, where they have, because of like the country as a nation, they had said that that their key strength, they want to be known for technology advancement, for example. And that sort of like, reflected in some of the things that were put in place by certain ministries within their country. Yes, sir, I think that's what I wanted to add.
All right, cool. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think that's important. And in answering that, I think you've even answered one of the questions, I want to ask, right? But before we get into that, typically in the Nigerian education system, right, maybe when you get to year 400 level or at a certain point in the university, industrial training, be used synonymously as internship. I don't know, maybe you can use that interchangeably, right? But the typical way is you get like a letter from your institution and they expect you to go out there, look for any organization, just stay there for 6 weeks, stay there for 6 months or 3 months or what have you. So I would just like to hear your thoughts in terms of how can Nigeria institutions, universities, how can they create meaningful internship programs, for their students, all right? So it makes a lot of sense, because so many people just waste this time doing nothing, or they don't even get like the right, and this is like a valuable time that a student are supposed to get relevant, like industry experience. So I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay. So I think that how the Nigerian institution can create more meaningful industrial training programs would be partnership, collaboration. So like, I'm very big on collaborations. I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. If something exists and is good enough, just come together, build on that layer, right? But I don't want to point fingers at just the institutions. Also, as private as the private sector, need to reach out to them more. And so, like, in answering this question, like, I think I would go back a bit to the curriculum redesign, because I think we've missed it somewhere a long time ago. So, for example, everybody wants to go to the university. Everybody wants a BSc. Everybody wants a BSc, and then you move on and you get a master's, and then you move on and you get a PhD. But I think we really, 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 really did miss something there. We have colleges of education. We have technical colleges. We have... There's a place for everything, right? So, from my understanding and like the way the university system should really work is for people who are interested in getting into academia or research. And that's a very, very, very good ground. So I'm just going to take the university right now for this particular question, where the university system should use as an R&D center for the private sector. So you take your case studies to them, the different departments, they work on it, the students get involved in doing that research. So The system where we right now, you sit down and then the lecturer comes and dictates to you X, Y, Z, and then they give you an examination and you have to pour that back out. I don't know that that system is good, because I don't know that that makes a well-rounded student. You should be able to explore. You should be able to think. You should be able to have conversations. That's what the university system really should be about. Masters onto the master degree level. When you are at the BSc level, you should start to conduct research from the get-go. And that's why I think that the university environment is a good R&D center for the private sector to leverage, where they take the, like, you're trying to develop a product, you're trying to develop a service, and then you use the university system as your research center to find out, to do the market analysis and whatnot. And then when it's time for them to actually work or do the what is referred to as CWES now, right, which is the industrial training that you spoke about, rather than give the students letters to go out and look for an uncle that would just sign for them, and they're really not learning anything, the private sector and universities collaborate, whereby they know that at every given time, every year, from June to August or from June to October, 4 months, 5 months, whatever, we're going to take students from XYZ institution. They're going to come work with us. They're going to gain experience working with us. The research that they are conducting in school, they're going to see it in real life, how it works when they come into the company to work with us for 4 months, for 3 months, for 5 months, depending on how that is structured out. And then also for those who are more technical, you get them involved in, so every now and then, you want to construct a road, you want to construct a building, even like federal government projects that are run by foreign companies. You have CCECC, or so you have Julius Berger. You can get the professors who are skilled, who understand, who are not just like, who understand how it works, to work with their students to build these projects as architects, as civil engineers, as what are the other very technical roles that exist? I think that might be a better way to approach having meaningful internship programs. So it's not just about, I've gone through the university system for 4 years or for 5 years and I've learned this in class, and you come out and you cannot practice what you've learned or what you have been certified in. You have a certificate saying that you're a graduate of civil engineering, but you do not know how a construction site works.
Yeah, I mean, thank you very much for sharing that. I think that's really important, right? There was a project that happened, was it last year or 2 years ago, somewhere around where I live. And you can see all these Chinese, they're the one like doing everything. I'm like, I know this is Lagos, right? You have the University of Lagos down there. You have like maybe Pan African University. Yeah, because I mean, this is like a real life. This is a real project. You know, how can we ensure, you know, we integrate, you know, our school curriculum to real life experience? And I think what you said is really important. And with conversations like these, I believe we start to reawaken how we can, you know, make the right decisions in making things work. Earlier in the conversation, you gave an example of China as an example, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of what they are doing in the way they learn and stuff. So I would just like to talk more about apprenticeship model, all right? This is also a very, very important phenomenon when it comes to learning, right? Apprenticeship. Yeah. How is that? Well, what can you say about the state of that in Nigeria? And what are the things that needs to be done? Or maybe we can also give examples of maybe other countries or successful examples from other places that we can learn from about how we can really develop the apprenticeship model, you know, as a way for knowledge transfer, you know, in Nigeria.
Something that I mentioned earlier, I think when I was responding to the last question, is how we have glorified universities so much that everybody just wants to go through the university system. So to be honest, not everybody would get into the university. So depending on what you want to be, right? So like there's a place for vocational learning too. And that's where I made reference to like, so technological colleges and places like that. I see that some developmental organizations are trying to support the VET model. So that's vocational educational trainings, especially. So I know a few that have tried to create programs like that for reintegrating migrants. So people who had left Nigeria and were like, you know, deported or came or have come back home and have no means of livelihood. They're trying to create programs like that where they are building their vocational capacity and putting them through like, you know, vocational trainings. But I think that should also apply across board. So there are people who would finish from the secondary school system and, hey, I want to be an engineer. Go right into a technological college where you get hands-on experience and learn. I think that's like a good way to start to build ourselves. And so I give the example of China. I think Germany is also another country that seems to be getting it right with the apprenticeship model. And it's not a recent phenomenon. It's something that they have continued to do like over the years. And if we even look within Nigeria, so like there's an apprenticeship model that exists, even though it's informal, and it's more on the business side. So like they'll say my Igbo brothers is a model that they refer to as Onwa Boy, which is like a boy who comes to, who they've brought from the village, and he comes to learn, or he's living with an uncle, or you know, someone from his village brings him to the city and he's working with him in his shop, his business, to learn how to trade. And then after a duration, most of the time, like it takes a year and a half, so 18 months or 24 months. And afterwards, they are given their what you call freedom, and he even starts their own business. That can also be deployed in the education system. I think that another country that has a good apprenticeship model is Germany. And it's not a recent phenomenon for them. It's something that they've done over time, where they get, like, so vocational schools, that's something that is promoted. So you see, you have a lot of polytechnics, you have technological colleges, and so people who have interest in engineering or very technical skills go into those places of learning. Yes, they formalized it, and then as part of their program, they're supposed to, they get placed with institutions, and some of these institutions are the private institutions even get some sort of allowance from the government to be able to conduct this, because it's very important for them, and it's how they see that they can grow their economy. I think about 2 years ago, even in China, they created incentives for private for the private industry, for private organizations to take on students apprentices to learn, and these employers are able to claim, you know, annual subsidy ranging, like, at different prices depending on the type of work that they do and the, you know, amount of apprentices that they take into their system per year. So I think that's something that we can look into as a country to see. So that brings us back to, you know, government-private partnership, where the governments create an incentive, because what you see is the reality is a lot of private, and I also, like, understand why some Nigerian companies, organizations might find it hard taking on interns, because that's also an investment you're making. You're going to be teaching, they're going to be learning, and these businesses have to make money. And they would provide, when they have to provide salaries for their main staff, and then also provide stipend for the interns who are learning from them, it can be a lot to deal with, right? Because they're also, like, you're in business to make money. We're all fending for ourselves one way or the other in Nigeria. So yeah, a bit challenging. So if the government can provide some sort of incentives for organizations who participate in an internship or apprenticeship model, and sometimes it can be, you know, reducing taxes or giving them some sort of tax holiday. Might not necessarily, because of, we know where we are in Nigeria, might not necessarily be to provide them with the money, but I'm sure that there are different incentives that can be created around this to make this model work.
All right, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think the incentive part is very important. And I think it's also important to note that deepening that relationship between government, corporate, you know, and even NGOs or bilateral organizations. You know, what was it last day I saw something that UNDP is doing? I don't know if it's Jubilee's program or something. And what they're trying to do is also to, they're just looking for companies to take on interns, you know, and they'll pay during that period. I think those kind of initiatives are coming to life, you know, but we just need them to work on scale, you know. You know, imagine each state we have in Nigeria have a similar program like that, you know, just supporting 5,000 graduates just for internship, and they're willing to pay for them, all right? You know, even if you break that down to local government level. So thank you for sharing that idea. I think it's very powerful, and it's a very great way to drive the apprenticeship model. And this has really been a great conversation, Iwani. So as we round up, is there any other thing you'd like to share with us?
I'd say that I believe that you have business owners who listen to Curious K. If you look at it, not only from a CSR perspective, but because everybody wants, like, experienced talent on board. But if we look at the reality right now, most of the super experienced people you want to come on board are looking to get job, like, global jobs, and they're also even migrating. So someone has given you an opportunity, the very first job that you took on, or even if you did not, like, just think about it. Like, we need to build our country, we need to build our nation. Be open to receiving interns, because that's the only way that we can start to build the future workforce. And a lot of people shy away from, and I do understand, as a business owner, and so TTPC is not my first, it's not the first business that I try to, that I have built, but like, it can be stressful, but we also need to be able to build ourselves up. And one of the ways that I think we can do it is by taking on interns. So I have given myself the the title intern
mandate.
Where I'm now trying to say to people, just give them a try. I know that a lot of times there are people who, that I've had conversations with, and like, oh no, I don't want these Gen Z people. They also have something to offer. They might not sit in the code. There might be the, cultural difference, but if you take them on and work with them, as much as they're going to learn from you, you have things to also learn from them. So I think we should be really open to building our nation by building the future generations that are coming.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you very much for being on the show and sharing that. So if you're listening out there and you need an organization to partner with, or you need a pipeline of interns, one is the right person to connect to, right? We'll put a LinkedIn, TTPC LinkedIn link on the show notes, so you can check it out. Feel free to connect with her. And thank you everyone for listening to the show. This has been a great conversation, and thank you Iwani once again for being on the Curious Kid podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lovely time chatting with you.
Yeah, cool. Thank you, and have a great day. And thank you everyone for listening to the show. See you guys next time. Bye-bye. And remember, always stay curious.